Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 21.
We often think of the truly powerful as untouchable, don't we? But, you know, even the greatest heroes stumble sometimes.
Absolutely. Things don't always go to plan, even for legends.
Monkey King, Sun Wukong, who seems invincible most of the time, is facing a pretty dire situation.
Yeah, his master, Tang Sanzang, he's been captured by a demon.
Exactly. And you're joining us right at the boiling point of this specific confrontation.
It kicks off when the Demon King gets the news. His vanguard, this tiger general, has been defeated by what they call the hairy-faced monk.
And his reaction is quite something, isn't it?
Oh, completely dismissive, just arrogant, almost scoffing. He's sort of heard rumors about Sun Wukong, but clearly doesn't take him seriously at all.
Like, who is this guy? He can't possibly be a real threat, right?
Precisely. There's this palpable underestimation. He actually demands, bring me this Sun Wukong. I want to see this so-called nine-headed, eight-tailed monk.
He's got the wrong picture entirely.
Completely. And then when the demon finally makes his grand entrance, wow, he comes out of his cave and he definitely looks the part.
He looks formidable.
Absolutely. The description is really impressive. A golden helmet shining like the sun, you know, and matching golden armor.
Okay.
Pheasant feather plumes adding this sort of dramatic flair. He's got a yellow robe, a dragon-adorned belt.
The full regalia.
Yeah, a shining, that's a heart-protecting mirror, deerskin boots, a willow leaf patterned skirt. And he's wielding this menacing three-pronged steel fork.
Sounds terrifying.
The text even compares him to, like, a divine figure. It really emphasizes this seemingly insurmountable presence. Visually, he screams power.
Which makes what happens next even better. So he finally sets eyes on the actual Monkey King.
Right. And you can imagine his surprise, maybe even confusion.
Because he sees.
Not some giant monster, but this, well, small, kind of thin figure. The demon actually calls him a pitiful skeleton of a sick ghost.
Ouch. That's quite the insult.
It really is. Classic setup, though. Expectation versus reality.
But Monkey King doesn't just take it, does he?
Oh, not at all. His retort is brilliant. Instant, witty comeback. He says something like, hit me on the head with that fork handle and maybe I'll grow taller.
Huh. Perfect. Deflates that arrogance immediately.
Yeah.
Shows he's got brains as well as brawn.
Exactly. And it sets the stage. The demon clearly isn't interested in witty banter for long.
No, he launches straight into an attack, right?
Yeah.
Aggressive first move.
He does. But Monkey King's response is, well, unexpected again. He bows. Seems almost submissive.
Bows. But he's Monkey King.
I know. But as he bows, zap, he magically grows, shoots up to a height.
Which is what, about 10 feet tall?
Something like that, yeah. Huge transformation.
And the demon's reaction.
Total surprise.
Fascinating. And Monkey King's still confident.
Oh, dripping with confidence, almost taunting. He says something like, son, my staff is heavy. I'm afraid you can't handle it.
The sheer audacity. Love it.
And that's it for the talk. It just explodes into this really intense, close combat.
The demon with his force.
Thrusting and jabbing, yeah. And Monkey King parrying skillfully with his iron staff. He uses a move called Black Dragon Sweeping the Ground.
Sounds cool. How's the fight?
The narrative really builds the tension. So they go for like 30 rounds and it's incredibly evenly matched.
Wow. So it's a real fight.
Definitely. And it explicitly says, you know, a single direct hit from either weapon means death. So the stakes are super high.
Reminds you that even Monkey King isn't completely invincible.
Exactly. Which is probably why he decides he needs an edge. He needs to shift the odds.
Ah, here comes the cunning Monkey King we know. What does he do?
He uses one of his signature moves, plucks a few hairs from his body, chews them up into tiny pieces, and then blows them out.
And they become?
Loads of clones, dozens of identical Monkey Kings, each one holding an iron staff, suddenly filling the air surrounding the demon.
That's brilliant. Classic Monkey King tactic. Overwhelm him.
It's a fantastic visual, isn't it? And a really smart move. The demon goes from confident attacker to suddenly being surrounded.
He must have panicked.
Well, his reaction is definitely desperate and completely unexpected. He turns towards a specific direction, the T direction that's southeast.
Okay, southeast. Then what?
Opens his mouth once, twice, three times. And just unleashes this utterly terrifying yellow wind.
A wind, that's his counter.
Not just any wind, this is the game changer. The whole dynamic just flips right here.
How bad is it?
The description is, honestly, it's almost apocalyptic. It's not just a strong gust. It's this immense, magical force of nature.
Okay, tell me more. What does it do?
It sweeps across everything, transforming the sky and the earth. Trees, mountains uprooted like they're nothing, dust everywhere, blotting out the light.
That was intense.
It makes the Yellow River and the Shang River rage like crazy. The text says it shakes the heavens, causes alarm even down in the underworld.
Wow. So it affects everyone, everywhere.
Pretty much. We hear about panic among powerful beings, Arhats, great Vajras. They're thrown into disarray.
Even them?
Yeah. Bodhisattvas like Manjusri and Samantabhadra lose control of their mounts. Even someone like Zenwu, the true warrior, can't keep track of his sacred tortoise and snake.
That's insane. It's like cosmic chaos.
It really is. Lao Tzu struggles to keep his elixir furnace safe. Shouxing, the star of longevity, has to desperately cling to his fan.
And didn't you mention the queen mother?
Get this, even her grand peach banquet gets disrupted. Her scut sash apparently breaks in the gale.
No way. So literally no one is unaffected.
Seems like it. Erlang gets lost. Neza can't find his sword. The Heavenly King misplaces his pagoda. Even Lu Ban, the master craftsman, loses his special drill. It's a whole catalog of disruptions.
It's not just inconvenience though, right? There's real damage.
Oh yeah. Sacred places get hit hard. The Thunderclap Monastery, a really important place, has three layers collapse.
Oof.
And the Zhao Stone Bridge, famous for being indestructible, broken clean in two.
Unbelievable.
The sun dims, stars vanish behind the dust, animals are terrified, families are scattered, even powerful mythical creatures get confused. Dragons, thunder gods, even Yan Wang, the king of hell, and his ox head and horse face guardians are scrambling.
It reaches everywhere. What about Guanyin?
Incredibly, yes. The wind is so strong it buffets Mount Putuo, her sacred island, blows away one of her scripture scrolls, scatters lotus flowers. It just underscores how immense this thing is.
The text really emphasizes its uniqueness, doesn't it?
It does. The narrator explicitly says that since the creation of the world, no wind has ever been this, well, malevolent, this destructive. It's like a fundamental threat.
Okay, so in the middle of all this chaos, what happens to Monkey King's clones? His brilliant plan.
Completely backfires. The wind just rips through them, scatters them like leaves, spins them around helplessly in the air.
Oh, man. So much for overwhelming numbers.
Exactly. That raw, untamed power just nullified his magic.
And what about Monkey King himself? The original.
He gets blasted directly by the wind, too. It forces his special fiery eyes shut so tight he can't see a thing.
Blinded. So he can't fight.
Can't see, can't really wield his staff effectively. He's completely disoriented. He has no choice, really. He has to retreat.
Monkey King retreating. That doesn't happen often.
It's a stunning turnaround. Outmaneuvered, maybe even overpowered, not by skill, but by this totally unforeseen, devastating force.
The demon.
Having won, basically. He just withdraws back into his cave, like, job done.
Leaving Monkey King defeated outside. Wow.
Yeah. It leaves you really wondering what he can possibly do next.
And Pigsy's reaction, it's just peak Pigsy, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The text paints this picture of him basically hunkered down in a hollow somewhere.
Just hiding.
Hiding, eyes shut tight, muttering Buddhist prayers. He's clearly terrified, worried, sick about Monkey, and of course, the master.
He seems so helpless in that moment, you know, against that kind of force.
Totally. And then the wind stops. Poof. Sky clears up.
And his first thought, is Monkey okay?
Nope. It's, oh no, the horse and the luggage. I'm stuck here alone with them. And then Monkey shows up.
And Pigsy's first words are something like, whoa, what a wind. Where did you come from?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. He wants to know what on earth that was. He felt the power, the terror of it.
Yeah. And Monkey. He gives this account of the fight, and it sounds, well, pretty intense.
It does. He's brave, naturally, but you can tell he was maybe a little shaken by this one.
So he describes fighting the demon who's got this three-pronged steel fork.
Yep, a formidable weapon. And they went at it for about 30 rounds.
30 rounds. That's not insignificant. That suggests a real fight.
It really does. A proper contest of skill. And then Monkey, you know, does his thing.
His signature move.
Yeah.
The multiplying.
The body outside body technique, yeah. Creates clones of himself to try and surround the demon. Standard powerful Monkey move.
But it doesn't quite work this time.
No. Because the demon, feeling the pressure, unleashes the main event, that crazy yellow wind.
And Monkey's reaction to the wind itself is telling, isn't it? Even he's impressed, in a bad way.
He really is. He basically says, gosh, what a wind, multiple times. He even admits his own skills in making wind and rain are nothing compared to this.
Wow. For Monkey to admit something like that.
It really highlights how powerful this demon's specific magic is. It's not just brute strength. It's something elemental, almost overwhelming.
And Pigsy, thinking practically again, he asks, okay, but was the demon a good fighter? Was it the fork technique?
Right. Was it the martial skill that beat you?
And Monkey's answer is quite, well, honest, actually.
It is. He says the demon's fork technique was orderly, well-executed. He gives him credit. Says they were pretty much evenly matched in the actual combat.
So was that the fighting?
No. Monkey's very clear. It was the win. Only the win. That's what forced him to back off. It's a different kind of threat they're facing.
But the win didn't just, like, blow him away and that was it. There was another consequence, right? Something unexpected.
Yeah, a really interesting kind of humanizing problem. His eyes.
His eyes? What happened?
That magical wind, all the dust and grit, maybe. It made his eyes incredibly sore. They just wouldn't stop watering.
Ouch. So even the great sage equal to heaven gets sore eyes.
Apparently so. It's a vulnerability you don't often see.
And Pigsy's reaction to this. Sympathetic concern.
Huh. More like blunt practicality. He points out, brother, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere here. No eye doctors, not even an in around.
Thanks, Pigsy. Always helpful.
Right, but it does lead Monkey to make a decision.
Okay, what's the plan?
He figures that the demon won't harm the master straight away. So he decides, let's find somewhere to stay for the night. Rest up, deal with the eye problem, then figure things out.
Sensible, actually. Regroup.
Exactly. So they start walking as it's getting dark, and they follow the sound of dogs barking, see some faint lights.
And they find this place, an estate.
Yeah, seemingly quite isolated. The description is actually really beautiful, quite poetic. Talks about purple fungus, white rocks, fireflies, orchids, bamboo, a stream.
Quite a contrast to the demonic windstorm earlier. Feels almost unreal.
It does feel a bit like an oasis. And the text notes it's remote, a place travelers don't usually pass. That feels significant later.
Okay, so they approach cautiously, I imagine.
Definitely. And Monkey, putting on his polite face, asks an old man who appears if they could possibly have shelter for the night.
Does he explain their situation?
He does. Introduces them, says they're disciples of the Tang monk heading west, and mentions, you know, that their master just got kidnapped by the Yellow Wind Demon.
How does the old man react to that?
He's wary at first, which, fair enough, right? Remote place, stranger showing up at dusk talking about demons.
Yeah, it could be bandits making up a story.
Exactly. He mentions fears of bandits, wild animals, but eventually he decides they seem okay and welcomes them in, apologizes for being cautious.
So they get inside, finally a bit of respite.
Mm-hmm. They're offered tea, some sesame rice, moment of calm.
And then Monkey brings up his eye problem again.
Yeah, it seems almost out of the blue in this setting. He just asks the old man if he happens to know any remedies for sore eyes caused by wind.
How does the old man take that?
He's initially a bit skeptical. He even makes a comment like, oh, monks don't usually get sick, do they? Kind of reflects a common idea about holy men being above illness.
Interesting perspective. So Monkey explains.
Right. Monkey clarifies, no, it was that crazy wind from the demon.
And this, where things get weird, right?
This is where it gets really interesting, because the old man doesn't just say, oh, bad wind. He identifies it specifically.
He knows what it is.
He calls it the Yellow Wind Demon's Samadhi Divine Wind. That word, Samadhi, points to something deeply powerful, maybe spiritual, not just ordinary wind.
Whoa. So this random old man knows about high-level demonic magic.
Apparently. And he describes how terrifying it is, says it darkens the sky, bothers ghosts and spirits, shatters cliffs, can kill people instantly.
He sounds genuinely impressed, or maybe horrified.
Both, I think. He's absolutely astonished that Monkey actually survived being hit by it, which, again, just emphasizes how dangerous it was.
And Monkey's response, still in pain, but...
But still Monkey. He basically puffs up his chest, metaphorically speaking, and says something like, well, we're not gods, but gods are kind of my juniors, you know? My life isn't ended that easily.
Classic Monkey. A bit boastful even when asking for help.
Totally. But he finishes with, but yeah, my eyes still really hurt.
Huh. So does the old man buy the boast?
He seems to. He looks at Monkey differently, says something like, aw, someone with a background. He recognizes Monkey's not just some ordinary traveler monk.
And this changes things.
It does. Because then the old man reveals something incredible. He says he sometimes gets watery eyes, too.
Okay.
And he just happens to have this special ointment, the 3 flowers, 9 seeds paste.
Wait, a magical sounding name for exactly what Monkey needs.
Precisely. He claims it cures all eye problems caused by wind. Talk about a stroke of luck. Or maybe not luck.
Yeah, that feels a little too convenient, doesn't it?
It really does. In these kinds of stories, convenience often points to something else going on.
So Monkey, naturally, asks if he can try some.
Politely, of course. Might I trouble you for a little?
And the old man, happy to oblige.
Readily agrees. Gets out the small agate jar, takes a jade hairpin, nice touch, and applies a bit of the paste directly to Monkey's eyes.
Wow, very hands-on service.
Tells him to keep his eyes closed, rest up, let it work. Seems like an amazing act of kindness.
Meanwhile, what's Pigsy doing?
Oh, Pigsy's getting their bedding sorted, and he can't resist a little joke at Monkey's expense.
Oh, yeah.
Teases him about needing a seeing eye staff now that his eyes are closed.
Yeah. Always finding a moment for humor, that one.
Yeah. The text also mentions Monkey kind of using his powers or meditating late into the night before finally sleeping.
Okay, so ointment applied, jokes made, they finally sleep. What happens in the morning?
The morning brings a total shock. Monkey wakes up at dawn.
Eyes feeling better.
We assume so, but the big surprise is the house is gone.
Gone, like completely vanished.
Completely, no building, no doors, no old man. Just the old locust and willow trees they saw when they first arrived.
And Pigsy.
Still fast asleep on the grass nearby.
Whoa. Okay, that's definitely not normal. How does Pigsy react when he wakes up?
Utter confusion, just complete bewilderment. Where's the house?
And his immediate next thought. Let me guess.
The horse and the luggage. Did they take the horse?
Oh, Pigsy. Predictable.
Monkey points out, no, the horse and luggage are right there, safe and sound.
Which must make Pigsy even more confused. If they weren't robbed, then what?
Exactly. He starts trying to rationalize it in the most mundane way. He's like, wow, that household sure is lazy, packing up and moving without even telling us.
He thinks they just moved house overnight without making any noise.
He genuinely wonders why they didn't hear anything. Like maybe they were hiding from taxes or something. His mind just doesn't go to magic.
It's kind of adorable in a way, that contrast between his worldview and their reality.
It really is. But Monkey, of course, he gets it.
He knows what happened.
He seems to. He has this little knowing chuckle, apparently.
And points Pigsy towards.
A piece of paper stuck to one of the trees. A note.
Uh-huh. The explanation arrives. What does it say?
It's a four-line verse. Pigsy reads it out.
And the gist is?
The gist is, that house wasn't real. It was an illusion. A temporary place conjured up by the Dharma protecting Galan.
Galan. Who are they?
They're guardian deities in Buddhism, specifically ones tasked with protecting the Dharma, the teachings, and in this case, protecting the Tang monk on his journey.
So divine intervention, the old man, the house, the medicine, it was all them.
Exactly. The note explicitly says the medicine was given to cure Monkey's eye pain, and it tells them, get on with it. Go subdue the monster.
Wow, so they were being helped without even realizing it at first.
Right. And Monkey recognizes these deities. He explains they operate under orders from the Bodhisattva Guanyin to secretly watch over the Tang monk.
Secretly being the key word, I guess. Yeah. Why haven't they helped more obviously before?
Well, Monkey offers a reason. He suggests that since Pigsy joined the group, they haven't really needed the Gelan's direct help as much. A bit of a backhanded compliment to Pigsy, maybe.
Huh, perhaps. So the Gelan step in when things get really tough, like Monkey being incapacitated by the wind.
That seems to be the implication. They provide help subtly, without revealing themselves, when it's truly needed.
How does Pigsy take this revelation? Is he annoyed they were tricked?
Actually, no. He seems to understand it pretty quickly. He gets that the deities couldn't just appear openly.
He's okay with the illusion.
Yeah, he's more focused on the fact that they did help. They got eye medicine for Monkey. They got a meal, a place to rest. He's actually grateful.
Good old practical Pigsy. Focus on the benefits.
He even tells Monkey, essentially, don't blame them. Let's just be thankful and focus on rescuing the master. He brings it back to the mission.
Right. So the divine intervention worked. Monkey's eyes are better. And they have their next steps figured out.
Pretty much. Monkey agrees with Pigsy. No time for complaints. His plan is to go scout out the Yellow Wind Cave first.
Reconnaissance. Makes sense.
Yeah, get the lay of the land, see what they're up against. He tells Pigsy to stay behind and guard the horse and luggage.
And Pigsy's okay with that plan.
He is, but with a typical Pigsy condition. He basically says, okay, but find out if the master is still alive first. If he is, we go all out. If not, well, he sort of leaves it hanging.
He wants proof of life before committing to a potentially deadly rescue. Can't entirely blame him, I suppose.
No, it's cautious, it's pragmatic, it's Pigsy.
So Monkey heads off, determined, leaving Pigsy with the baggage once again.
So Wukong, instead of just charging in, does something. Well, unexpected. He changes into a mosquito.
A flower-legged mosquito, no less. It's such a Wukong move.
Thinking outside the box, right? So tiny mosquito Wukong flies in.
Total stealth.
And he hears the monster kind of bragging, talking about surviving this big wind attack.
Right, and the monster actually thinks the wind might have finished Wukong off.
Yeah, or at least scared him away. He's feeling pretty pleased with himself.
Overconfident. A classic villain mistake.
Then Wukong finds his master, Tang Sanzang, tied to this pillar. A wind-fixing pillar, the text calls it.
Mm-hmm. And the poor master is despairing, thinking his disciples aren't coming.
And Wukong, as a mosquito perched on his head, whispers to him, like, hey, I'm here.
It's kind of funny, but also shows his dedication, right? Even Tiny, he's trying to reassure him.
Imagine hearing a mosquito tell you the Monkey King is on the case.
It's that mix of seriousness and, yeah, absurdity that makes the story so memorable.
Okay, so Wukong knows where his master is. Stage one, check. But then comes the really crucial part.
The eavesdropping continues.
Right. He flies back near the main hall, listening in, and a smaller demon comes in, reporting he ran into Zubaji, describes him as a long-mouthed, big-eared.
Poor Baji. But this is where the monster gets really careless.
Yeah, he dismisses Wukong again, figures he's dead or maybe run off to get back up.
He's underestimating him completely.
And then the slip-up. He boasts out loud, his wind is unstoppable.
Except,
if anyone can steal my wind, he says, it would only be the Bodhisattva Lingji.
Boom. There it is. The key.
He just handed Wukong the answer. Why do that? Just pure arrogance.
I think so. Just absolute confidence that Wukong is no threat, that no one could possibly overhear or use that information.
Yeah.
Raises the stakes, like you said.
You can almost picture Wukong the mosquito doing a little fist pump.
Absolutely. He's got the crucial intel now.
So he zips back out, finds Baji, who's apparently dealt with that messenger demon.
Where?
And tells him everything. Master's tied up, the monster's bragging, and the name, Lingji Bodhisattva.
And that name is everything. For anyone listening who might not know, a bodhisattva is like a really powerful, enlightened being in Buddhism.
Yeah, someone who helps others. So this Lingji isn't just some random person. They're likely very powerful.
Exactly. It gives them a concrete plan. Before, it was just fight the monster. Now it's find Lingji Bodhisattva.
It totally shifts their strategy, doesn't it?
Completely. They have a specific solution to seek out, not just a problem to overcome.
So we need to find this Bodhisattva. But where? How?
And here's where things get, well, even more interesting. As they're standing there, probably wondering what to do next.
Yeah.
An old man just appeared on the roadside, seemingly out of nowhere. Just a regular old man.
Hmm. Convenient.
Very. Big Z, being the practical one, says, hey, let's ask him for directions. Maybe he knows where this Lingji Bodhisattva lives.
Makes sense. Did they ask?
They did. And the old man is helpful. He gives them directions. Says Lingji Bodhisattva lives on Little Sumeru Mountain.
Little Sumeru Mountain, okay. So, problem solved. Get directions, go there.
Not quite. There's a twist. Wukong looks back after getting the directions, and the old man...
What?
He just vanishes. Poof. Turns into a gust of wind and is gone.
Whoa. Okay, so not just a regular old man then.
Definitely not. And where he was standing, there's a note left behind.
A note? What does it say?
Big reveal time. The note says the old man was actually Li Changgeng.
Li Changgeng? The name sounds familiar. Isn't that a...
Tai Bai Jingxing, Venus, the planet spirit, a major figure from the heavens.
Wow. So divine intervention, literally.
Literally. And the note does more than just reveal his identity. It specifically mentions the key item, the flying dragon staff of Lingji Bodhisattva.
So it confirms the Bodhisattva is the answer and even hints at the specific tool needed, like a cosmic clue.
Precisely. A celestial breadcrumb trail, as you said earlier. And Pixie's reaction is interesting, too.
How so?
He's overcome with gratitude, bows to the sky. The text mentions Li Changgeng actually helped Pixie out before, saved his life when he got in trouble with the Jade Emperor.
Ah, so there's history there. Adds another layer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Interconnectedness. Help coming from unexpected or maybe expected but forgotten places.
Okay, so now they have the destination, Little Sumeru Mountain, and they know who to ask for, Lingji Bodhisattva, and even what might help, the flying dragon staff. Wukong heads off.
Wukong heads off, flies there on his cloud, finds the place.
What's it like, Little Sumeru Mountain?
It's described as very serene, peaceful. You hear chanting, smell incense, see offerings. A real contrast to the demon's cave, you know?
Yeah, sets a different tone entirely. Spiritual power versus chaotic wind.
Right. So Wukong arrives, Very polite this time, actually. He asks a Taoist disciple to pass on his request for help to the Bodhisattva.
And Lingji Bodhisattva agrees to help.
He does. And he provides some crucial backstory about this yellow wind demon.
Oh, it's not their first encounter.
Not for Lingji, no.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out this demon used to be a rat from Spirit Mountain, the Buddha's place.
A rat? Seriously?
Yep. Stole some valuable lamp oil from the Buddha's altar. Lingji caught him back then.
Okay, so a thief originally. What happened then?
Well, the Buddha was compassionate, spared the rat's life, but he tasked Lingji with keeping an eye on him, essentially. And he gave Lingji two things specifically to control this wind power.
Let me guess.
Oh.
The flying dragon staff was one.
That's one. And the other was a wind-fixing pill.
Mm.
So Lingji has the exact tools needed because of this past incident.
And the demon causing trouble now is basically breaking his parole then, violating the Buddha's mercy.
Exactly. He was supposed to stay put and behave. But here he is, capturing monks and causing chaos. It shows that second chances aren't always taken.
So Lingji has the means and the motive to deal with him. Does he just go straight down and fight?
Not quite. There's strategy involved here too, which is interesting.
Okay.
Lingji tells Wukong, you go down first, provoke the demon, get him to come out of his cave.
Lure him out.
Right. Well, Wukong does that, Lingji will wait up in the clouds, ready to make his move at the right moment.
Smart. Using Wukong's strength as bait, essentially, while Lingji waits with the specific counter.
It's a good plan. Playing to their strengths.
So Wukong goes down, and I assume he's not subtle about provoking the demon.
Not Wukong. He goes right up to the cave, starts smashing the doors, yelling for the demon to come out and return his master.
Classic Wukong. Does the demon come out?
Oh, yeah. He comes out furious. They fight, a brief clash, and then the demon decides to use his ultimate weapon.
The wind.
The wind. He starts to summon it. But just as he does,
Lingji steps in.
That's the moment. Lingji, from the clouds, casts a spell on that flying dragon staff.
And what happens?
It transforms into this incredible, huge, golden dragon, eight claws, gleaming, descends right down.
Wow.
And this golden dragon just grabs the yellow wind demon, pins him against the mountainside, neutralizes him completely.
So the specific tool worked perfectly. The wind is stopped. The demon is caught.
Instantly. And then comes the reveal. The anticlimax, almost.
What's that?
With the magic subdued, the demon reverts to his true form.
Which is? We heard he was a rat before.
Close. A yellow-haired weasel.
A weasel. All that power, that terrifying wind from a weasel.
Apparently so. It's a great moment. This huge threat revealed to be, well, a weasel. It really drives home that appearances can be deceiving, right? Power doesn't always look imposing.
Absolutely. Kind of deflates the whole monstrous image. So what happens to the weasel demon now? Does Lingji finish him off?
No, he doesn't. He explains that he can't kill him. Because the weasel broke the Buddha's decree. He needs to be taken back to Spirit Mountain, back to the Buddha, to face judgment for his actions. Cosmic justice needs to be served properly.
Accountability. Makes sense within that framework.
Yeah. So Lingji takes the subdued weasel away.
Leaving Wukong in. Where's Pigsy in all this?
Wukong goes back down and finds Pigsy, who's obviously overjoyed that the demon is dealt with.
I bet. So they head back to the cave.
Together, yes.
Yeah.
They go back into the cave. There are still some minor demons left, the underlings.
Do they put up a fight?
Not much of one, apparently. The text just says they quickly dispatch them, mentions rabbits, foxes, deer acting as demons. Easy cleanup after the main event.
Right. And then the main goal. Freeing the master.
Exactly. They finally untie Tang Sanzang from the wind-fixing post.
Must have been a huge relief for him.
Immense. He's incredibly grateful, thanking his disciples over and over for saving him.
And then, did they just pack up and leave immediately?
Almost. They share a simple meal together first, a moment of peace and recovery after the ordeal. Then, yes, they pack up their things and get back on the road, continuing the journey west.